Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Greetings to you, my loves. You're listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, or watching it if you're on YouTube. Obviously, I want to send out my love and my prayers to those of you who have been affected by the meteor impact in New York. My God, I can't believe that fucking happened. It's terrifying. And I'm not going to say anything else other than to those of you who are out there, I'm wishing you the best. And I'm so sorry. I don't think anyone thought that could actually happen to the dinosaurs, but it happens all the time. Other planets are pockmarked with meteor impact scars. I mean, honestly, you would kind of think like maybe the place you want to live on a planet isn't on the part facing the abyss where mountains fall out of it from time to time. I'm not victim blaming here or anything, but my heart goes out to those good citizens of New York. And if you look down in the comments, there's going to be links to where you can donate money to victims of the meteor impact. I'm very sorry that happened. Today's guest is one of the most requested guests on the DTFH. Unfortunately, I hadn't had him on in a while because he lives on the other side of the country. You probably know him from his amazing podcast, History on Fire. And because he was kind enough to be on this show, I must plug his amazing company, Purist Mushrooms, where you can find the finest organic mushroom extracts. He gave me some of these, and it's incredible. So, again, this is like healthy. Not that psilocybin isn't healthy, but this is like workout mushrooms, not see Jesus mushrooms. Regardless, go to puristmushrooms.com or History on Fire if you love Daniele Bolelli. And now, everybody, welcome Daniele Bolelli! Funny thing is, you can make anything sound serious when you do that.
Taylor Swift is an incredible person.
I think she is. Mr. Bolelli, welcome back. It's been too long, my friend. Let me apologize in advance. I am slightly hungover. I haven't been hungover in a while. South by Southwest got me last night.
Fair.
How are you, my friend?
Good. All good. I enjoy my life right now. I seriously enjoy my life.
Fuck? You're not supposed to enjoy your life right now. Did you know that? It's unfashionable.
I'm sorry. Life sucks. It's terrible. It's miserable. It's awful. By the way, I have no audio in.
Perfect. So catch me up, man. Yeah. Catch us all up to speed. It's been too long. What's going on?
In my life? Let's see. So I've been living outside of Los Angeles for a while now, since actually the beginning of the pandemic. I've been living in Ojai.
I knew that. You made the Ojai transition. A lot of people did that.
Tiny town. Less than 10,000 people.
Yeah.
I love it. I hear it's great. Sound, not anything. Really.
Just the rattles of ayahuasca shamans in the woods. Pretty much it.
Far away. So it's a mellow place. I still teach college, but mostly online. I get to stay home most of the time.
Which fits.
I think I'm a perfect candidate for house arrest, I found out during COVID. You make me stay at home. I'm like,
I can't leave. I never thought of that. Jesus, anytime anyone invites you, I go, dude, I would love to go to your birthday party, but I'm under house arrest.
I think I'm going to work something out.
Oh my God.
To make it official.
Fake ankle bracelets or something.
That's perfect.
It's incredible.
It's perfect.
So you've become a recluse.
Yes, and I love it. I'm still doing History on Fire, podcast, Drunken Taoist. I'm writing a bunch. That I'm having a blast. That's probably the thing I'm having the most.
Can you talk about what you're writing about?
Yeah, sure. I'm in talk right now to have it published. I finished a historical fiction about the life of Caravaggio, the crazy Italian painter.
Yeah, congratulations.
So I did that one. I had a blast. And there's more stuff that I want to do. I was talking, maybe I should have mentioned the details because it's not my business, but like a director was pretty big in that space, was talking about maybe doing an adaptation on a Native American story that we are both discussing. He's Native himself, and we're talking about that. So I've been enjoying the idea of taking historical events and making, and you know, you fictionalize them. It's not like when I do History Absolutely. On Fire, it's all factual and super fact-checked and stuff. When you go into the fiction space, to me, it's fun because you're creating archetypes. You're creating mythology. You're creating
great stories. Wouldn't you say any history is not intentionally fictional,
sure.
but you got to fill in the blanks.
100%. And I think that's the nature of history to begin with. But of course, when you're selling it as history, mm-hmm. you are going to be as honest as humanly possible about, look, we know A, we know B.
Yep.
In between A and B is my speculation, and I'm guessing based, it's an educated opinion of what I think may have gone down between A and B.
Gotcha.
And that's fine. And when you do fiction, of course, you don't have to do that. You fact check and do all the little things, and you can just go off and just have fun with the stories. And
I'm reading a book. I wish I could remember anything these days, but the book is, it's history. It's mm-hmm. not fiction, but it's about the family that Robinson Crusoe is based on. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. I read the Robinson Crusoe as a kid. That's about the extent of my familiarity with the story.
Basically, a family, it's really interesting. It's a family, they're out on a boat. They have a piano on the boat, which is kind of eerie to think about. They're out on this boat. They have a piano. They're just playing piano out in the ocean. But what they are doing is hunting sharks.
Okay.
Because apparently that was a big thing. And it's like right around, it's like somewhere like off the coast of Hawaii. They're hunting sharks. And the crew that they have, there's a guy on the crew who was a fucking monster. Mm-hmm. And basically, they would just go to islands and just, you know, steal people, human traffickers, slavers.
Yeah.
And that's become like the first mate is this fucked up dude.
Yeah.
They're hunting sharks in an area that is the superstitions believe it's cursed on a boat that's considered cursed. And of course, the boat fucking gets wrecked and they wash up on this goddamn island. And it's just interesting to me, not just because it's exciting, but you know, there's a lot of filling in the blanks.
Yeah, totally, of course.
And you know, there's no fucking way you could say that his hair blew in the wind.
No, of course not.
But historical fiction, you take even more liberties with it.
Absolutely.
Whatever you want.
I mean, that's kind of what when I went, like for example, I did some podcasts on Caravaggio that were straight up history. But then when I write the story, I'm building. Like for me, Caravaggio, one of the things that's interesting about him is that he's the prototype of the cursed artist, you know, the suffering artist, genius and madness and all of that.
Yes.
Which is, of course, is kind of a depressing archetype.
Because
it's essentially telling you that sensitivity is a curse. That is something that being super sensitive and creative is something that inevitably comes with monstrous amount of pain. It's a doom and gloom view. And so what I did is like I took, 50, 60% of his real story, added a whole bunch, and then I'm going to give it a completely different arc in terms of how it comes out of the other end. Because I want a story that's that kind of counters that message, that counters the message that sensitivity is just something that you are cursed with and is just sure you can console yourself with the fact that you created something beautiful, but you're doomed to a shitty life. You know, that's a horrible message. And so I took the same character, but gave him a very different twist.
Okay. That's a cool take on it. I mean, I think that tortured artist archetype mm-hmm. is somewhat dangerous because I think a lot of people would love to be, Dali or mm-hmm. something like that, Andy Warhol or something. I mean, God, that must've been cool. But and so then, or Elliott Smith, maybe, I don't know. Like, but you sort of, or Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, of course.
So you look at the life of these people, their deaths, and it paints a Johnny Cash. It paints a picture of a horrific life. Or in that life, there's like for Johnny Cash. I mean, we all know the story. He was a speed freak.
Yep.
He was on barbiturates and speed. He apparently, climbed down into a coal mine. You know that story?
No.
Apparently, he was so depressed that he went into a coal mine, down and down and down in the coal mine. Yep. And he was just going to go as far down into the darkness
and just
lay down and die.
Okay.
That is the most insane form of, because it's on YouTube, unaliving yourself that I've ever fucking heard. But who wouldn't want to be Johnny Cash? And so... You know what's easy to emulate? Taking speed and being depressed.
Of course.
Now anyone can do that.
Yeah,
doesn't take much practice to take speed or Xanax. But to become Johnny Cash, you also have to be an amazing musician.
Mm-hmm.
And so people think, okay, if I sort of emulate the insanity, maybe the other
genius
side
will come.
I won't have to practice. If I'm crazy enough, I won't have to practice.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's a dangerous archetype in that it can fool you into it can mix up your priorities when it comes to getting good at anything.
And I think, you know, the reality is what's the element of truth there? There is an element that if you are super sensitive, you are more likely to be really creative.
Sure.
You are more likely to have some creative ability because you feel shit more than the average person. So you are more likely to just tear out your heart and soul and put it on a page or in a song or in something. But of course, the idea is you're bound to madness and pain, and it's all, you know, your creativity is tied to that. And to me, it's like that's partially true in the sense that, yes, being oversensitive is more likely than not to put you in like a pretty intense emotional state. And let's say even... Let's even assume the case where you are a creative genius. You are brilliant. You have
things. Thank you. You're right.
but at the same time, you don't want... It's like, who cares if I have that, but I have a miserable life? That's not the point. So to me, the thing that interests me in life in general is how do you take a strong sensitivity, a strong ability to feel a lot and not make it be something that is inevitably will lead to depression and sadness and pain and all of that. Because, I mean, you will taste pain for sure if you have that sensibility, but it's one thing to taste it. It's one thing to get stuck there.
Right.
And you know, to go through it, anybody who's sensitive will go through it. But to be able to come out from the other end and if anything stronger, that's what interests me.
Yeah, it's like, you know, there's in countless self-help books and, you know, religious traditions, there's the invitation to turn towards the pain that you're running. And I wonder if in the description of this tortured artist, really what you're describing is someone running away from the what they're feeling and that the sensitivity part is actually, I mean, I understand because let me tell you, I'm a master of running away from pain. It's my new book coming out, Run Away From Your Pain. Run Away From Your Pain Towards a Happy Life.
Great self-help. I like it.
It's incredible. I like it. And I know all the
denial
tricks.
Denial as a strategy. I love
Absolutely. It. Absolutely. It's denial. It's alcohol. It's not getting enough sleep to numb yourself because you're kind of delirious.
Yes.
But really, it's sort of the when you hear stories of someone shooting heroin, for example, I think it's safe to say this is a person who is not running towards the pain.
Yeah.
And what's bizarre, I mean, if you've ever done any kind of practice where you actually just feel as let it happen, you do realize, even though it seemed unbearable when you were starting to, when you were contemplating, all right, maybe I'm going to like address the grief, address the pain. And, and you think, I can't do that. I'll go mad.
Yeah, of course.
And then you do it and you realize, oh, it sucks, but it's certainly not as bad as I thought it would be. And also you realize like my addressing it isn't making it go anywhere.
No, exactly.
But it's also like somehow reducing all the reactive shit that makes you demonstrate what people would call crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy is more like I don't want to call it cowardice, because we all do it. Sure, I don't want to make everyone feel like a coward. I am one. But anytime you sort of sit with it and deal with it, you do realize it isn't even what you thought it was.
Yeah. I mean, it still sucks, but
absolutely,
the alternative is not any better. It's not that because you start shooting up or distracting yourself with this, that, and the other, it gets better. It doesn't. You're just still, if anything, it has a deeper close in you. You just feel it a little less.
You understand it more. Usually, like, from far away, whatever the fucking thing is, the thorn in your heart is, mm-hmm. from far away, it doesn't seem very nuanced at all.
No.
Then the closer you get to it, you realize it's not just one thing. It seems to be a bundle of things. And then you get closer and you realize not all those things are bad. And then you get closer and you realize, you know, like any other thing you zoom in on, it's got a lot of space in there.
Right. And I mean, regardless, maybe you don't see any silver lining in the process. Maybe it just still sucks, even when you zoom in. But the point is, you can still get through it in a way that's you have options to get through it in a way that's healthier, or just avoid it and you will have it. I can remember when my father was dying. So I went back to Italy and I'm there with him. And like the first day when I saw him and I realized just how bad he was, man, he fucked me up. Like I was like, okay, I don't know that I'm going to get through this. You know?
Yeah.
This is just... And so I remember it's the one and only time that I ever took a benzo. I took like whatever the allowed dose was, I took like less than half.
Oh, Jesus.
So I took like a minimal amount, right?
Ugh.
And it was enough to knock me out, to just remove all emotions for 12 hours or something. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. This was fantastic.
The best.
The next day, the situation hasn't changed. It still sucks, right? It's still as horrible as I left it. But now I'm like, I'm in a mental space where I didn't get caught by surprise. It's 1% less awful than it was the earlier day in terms of, you know, my perception of it. And of course, the natural thing in me would have been, give me the benzo bottles, because it's still 98.9% shitty. But I was like, no, man. I don't want to become Jordan Peterson in a coal mine Russia or something. I don't want. So, no, you did it yesterday, and that was fine, because yesterday you were about to hop out of a window. So, yes, I see that taking half a benzo is a better alternative than hopping out of a window. Today, you deal with it. Today, you work through it, because today is going to suck horrendously. It's going to hurt like crazy. But it's not the, I'm literally about to hop out of a window.
Right.
Which is, okay, in that case, do whatever you got to do, you know?
Yes.
So to me, that was important to say, you know, part of it is not going to go away. I mean, I can make it go away for 12 hours artificially and never face it. It's not going to get better. It's if anything, it's going to fuck up my life even further.
Right.
And so I was like, no, now today you deal with it. And it was, you know, awful, painful, terrible, but doable, you know,
right?
Not like the this is gonna kill me, literally.
Yeah, so, but it sure feels like that.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, I want your book. I want Run Away From Pain. I'm a fan of that.
It's like, run away from pain. Go towards madness.
I don't like the all the people are like, no, pain is your friend. Fuck you, pain is your friend. Maybe not mine. You know, it sucks. It's terrible.
Yeah,
it's,
there's different kinds of pain.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. Like, it's like, obviously, like, generally, pain is a way that your body is telling you, hey, stop doing it. I'm sorry. I'm getting a nonstop text. I apologize. God damn it. Okay. Phone off. The devil is asleep.
Yes.
Like, whatever you have to cut there, cut that bullshit. I'm so sorry, man.
No,
I usually turn my phone off. So when you're dealing with like the emotional level,
mm-hmm.
it's interesting, because it's like, if you have a broken bone, for example, mm-hmm. one wouldn't say, well, the answer to the broken bone would be to touch it over and over and over. And yet the emotional stuff, weirdly, turning towards it and acknowledging it is almost all it takes. Just the acknowledgement is better than imagining it's not there or trying to distract yourself from it. Just, today sucks. Yeah. I feel like shit. Sometimes if I wake up and I'm like, oh no, I feel like shit. I can't feel like shit today. Mm-hmm. I got too much to do.
Yeah.
That makes it worse. But if I wake up, I'm like, yeah, I feel like shit, but I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Feeling like shit, feeling frustrated, angry, annoyed, stressed out, worried. Yeah. I'm still going to do it, but I'm also, you know, honoring whatever part of my psychological makeup feels like it needs to alert me to a certain mood state. And then I've noticed if I do that, paradoxically,
it's easier to move on.
Yeah. The resistance is so draining.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you nail an extremely important point of this stuff, because you got all the motivational speakers in the world, all the self-help, all the, that it's all like, no, this pain is a great opportunity. And it's like, man, this is horrible. Don't bullshit me. You know, it's like, don't like piss on my head and tell me it's raining kind of feeling. You know, this is terrible. Let's say that it's terrible. Let's acknowledge that it's terrible.
Yeah.
Once, as you said, and I like the word you use, acknowledge, you know, it's like, once we acknowledge that, doesn't mean that we're going to dwell in it.
Right.
You know, doesn't mean that then I want to just stay here forever and talk about how horrible it is. It's like, but, you know, if you get bad cards, well, don't show them to the other people. But in your head, you can acknowledge these are shitty cards.
Right.
This is just how it is. Now that we have established that, how am I going to play them? Because that's the only thing that matters at this point. It's like, it's not about right or wrong, fair or unfair. These are the cards in my hands. The only choice I get is how I play them. Okay, let's move on. You know, and that I find it's an honest process. But, you know, sometimes the skipping through and just going directly to, this is a great opportunity to practice your game and play more creatively. It's like, yeah, okay, we'll get there, but let me get there. Don't start there, you know?
If you don't, this is, Sun Tzu. If you don't know the terrain, you're certain to lose the battle or something like that. And this, what I've tried is essentially the equivalent of like, it's fucking winter outside, but you want it to be spring.
Mm-hmm.
So what do? If you're an idiot, you dress for spring thinking it won't be cold.
Right.
Go outside. Fuck, obviously you're an idiot. I mean, I've never done that, but I'm saying if you got a wintry heart and you're trying to dress for spring, pretending that shit isn't there, you're going to be fucked.
Yep.
It doesn't. And also, I do like your point, which is that this what we're talking about, I do think it is pop psychology, fashionable shit, and easily misunderstood. And the sort of pathological version of this is a person who feels that by articulating their misery and almost fetishizing it, you know, like being obsessed with it, so that the misery becomes part of their identity.
Yeah, exactly.
The never ending contemplation of why they're miserable and what the misery is and how they're miserable, and a strange kind of pat on the back for their courage in allowing everybody to know, you know why I'm fucking miserable?
Yeah.
I got attacked by fucking clowns when I was a kid. I was in a park and these fucking sick pedophile clowns jumped out of a well, and it's ruined me. And then they never stopped talking. Honestly, if that happened to me, I don't think I'd ever stop talking about it. But you know what I'm getting at.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's that form of being where the pain is the identity. And then there's the form of being where it's like, no. I don't need to make this my identity. Mm-hmm. It's just a facet of how I am right now. And then you still like attempt to go out into the world in a way that in some way, shape, or form is beneficial to the world. And I don't think, you know, overanalyzing yourself, confessionalism, and all the varieties of this fashionable personality that we see all over the fucking place right now is necessarily making the world a brighter place. It's just inviting other. It's like if you have boils and I have boils.
I'm really curious where this is going.
There's something to talk about there. Oh, what do you do for your boils?
Yes.
Oh, I put this like ointment on it and then I wrap them up in a bandage. Yeah. And I'm like, oh shit, I should try that. I'm going to go wrap my boils. Now, if you have boils and I have boils and we're like, dude, let's just fucking look at each other's boils. Look at the pus when I squeeze it. You see that pus? It fucking hurts. That's not good for anybody.
No.
You're going to spread whatever gross skin disease you have. It's a horrific analogy and probably not a good one. But the point is, it's this, I don't know, this thing that emerges. God, I was in the airport reading fucking books, autobiographies, and so many of them were some self-analysis. Pinned to the childhood.
Yeah, of course.
A never-ending obsession with all the things that went wrong, thus why.
Yep.
And in that sort of constant, like, obsession and announcement of it to the world, weirdly, you're trying to turn yourself into some kind of fucking hero.
Mm-hmm.
Because you went through a divorce.
Sure.
And you're alive now or some shit. You know what I mean? That's the other part of it. There's an egoic quality
to
it.
Of course. And I think, like, that's what I really like when you say that, acknowledge, because that's, to me, is the perfect balance, right? Because if you don't acknowledge it at all and you're in pure denial and you just skip directly to everything is a wonderful opportunity, it's fake, it's not dealing with reality,
right.
And it's superficial because you're really just not the... But on the other hand, as you said, if you become so obsessed with whatever the trauma is, whatever the pain is, that you dwell in it, you fetishize it, you become like, it becomes your identity,
yeah.
It becomes this thing that you never get out. That just as bad, if not worse, than the one who's just trying to skip it all together.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't exist.
Maybe they're not different.
No, exactly. So to me, those are both mechanisms that don't really lead to a good outcome.
I don't think so.
Because in one case, you just spend your time whipping yourself. In one case, you are essentially a master of self-denial, which, I mean, I guess there's something to that, but it usually comes back to bite you in the ass eventually.
Oh, for sure.
So to me, it's like, no, deal with what it is. Deal with the fact that certain things are ugly and painful and terrible. And now figure out a strategy to get out.
Yeah.
And just practically. It's not like you dealt with the emotions for a little bit. Now let's move on. Like, what can you do about it? This is where you're at. What do you do here? And sometimes you can and you come up with good ideas. Sometimes my daughter once, a few years ago, like probably the last time that I had a bad phase where I was like anxiety galore and something that was really hitting me hard. And, you know, when you get in that stage, you feel that you're drowning. Right.
Yeah.
You feel that you can't get enough oxygen
and
it's absolutely awful. And I remember talking with her and she was like, how many times has it happened to you already? And I'm like, well, you know, yeah, a lot, enough times. She's like, and every time you come out of the other end, okay. I was like, yeah, that is correct. So she's like, play video games, spend, you know, whatever. Right. It's like, whether it's a day, a week, a month, if it's really horrible, in a month you're going to be out. Maybe in a week you're going to be out.
Right.
It's a wave. It's going to pass over you and you're going to be fine at the other end.
Yeah.
And the moment she said that, like half of my anxiety went away because I was like, yeah, I am going to get out. So
right.
I just need to do time, essentially. I just need to let the wave ride. It sucks. But if I'm not thinking it's killing me at every second, it's so much easier to let it ride.
That's it. Yeah, that is it's so paradoxical. Honestly, I think there's like a real illiteracy when it comes to, like, we're really good at like physical trauma, dealing with it. But like, yeah, the like emotional component of human existence, it seems like we're fairly non-nuanced in the way we've been taught to work with it.
Yeah.
And this is something Chogyam Trungpa always uses the term workable.
Mm-hmm.
And also what I love about him is, you know, his students are always asking him things like, well, what about anger? Like, I don't remember the exact question, but like, is anger bad?
Yeah.
And he's like, actually, anger is very clear.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of describes the way someone who's like been meditating their whole fucking life, he describes the facets of anger. And instead of making it like the thing that many people do, which is almost they're ashamed, anger.
Yeah.
How often have you been in an argument with someone like, whoa?
Yeah.
Like, are you getting angry?
Yeah.
What's going on?
You hang out with a different crowd. I don't get that usually.
You don't?
Yeah.
Well, maybe this is what I say to myself.
Yeah.
Maybe I think a lot of people, okay, let's put it this way.
No, but that's interesting.
Let's categorize the emotional states, the ones that are taboo and the ones that are not.
Sure.
So obviously, what is a universally accepted emotional state contextually, I guess it depends on the context, joy.
Sure.
Now, you're probably expressing joy after you just drove over a bunch of people on a crosswalk. Not so acceptable.
Maybe a problem, yes.
But
yes.
In general,
yeah.
Joy.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
If you're radiating joy.
Yeah.
Radiating light. Wow. We love it.
Yeah.
And obviously happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And confidence. I don't know if we call that emotional state. Lucidity. Very nice. Now, so if you're demonstrating any of these and you know you feel like that, you wake up in the morning, you're like, oh, I feel great.
Yep.
You go out in the world with a kind of confidence because you feel good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you wake up pissed. Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm angry. What the fuck's wrong with me? Right. This is not an acceptable. It's like having your zipper down. You're not supposed to feel these things in public. Are very frowned upon. Don't be a dick, dude.
Yeah.
Why are you being a dick? Why are you grumpy?
Yeah.
Mr. Grumpy, what happened, Mr. Grumpy? Did you get sand in your diapers, Mr. Grumpy? You know?
Yeah.
These are not acceptable. And so we internalize that. And then when you realize you feel like that, you feel embarrassed.
But I think that's a very important point regarding the sense of shame. Because to me, it's like there's a difference between being angry and being a dick. You know, it's 100%. Like, I can be angry. And that's honest and is real. And I'm acknowledging something that's, this is where I'm at. This is where, whether it's good or bad, doesn't fuck it. This is where I'm at. And does not mean I'm going to be a dick to you. You know?
Right.
And I think it's like often there's a jump from, you can either be fake pleasant all the time and hide the demons inside.
Yeah.
Or if you let it out, suddenly you let everything out to the point that you just stop being a halfway decent person.
Yeah.
That's not good either. It's like, no, be honest with your emotions. If you're angry, be angry. If you are whatever, be whatever it is that you are. Just don't be a dick. It's not that hard. You know, it's like I can be angry and try not to be actively a dick to somebody, you know, where I'm like, hey, this is what I'm going through. This is why I'm mad. Or this is what you did that really got under my skin. Doesn't mean I hate you and I want to kill you. I get it. Maybe you had your but this is where I'm at. You know, there's a difference between being honest with emotions and then giving yourself license to be a complete asshole to everyone.
You know, I'm just a dick.
Yeah,
that's a whole style.
Yeah.
I'm the guy who's I'm a straight shooter.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, exactly. And then he's become an excuse to be a completely horrible person because I'm being honest. He's like, no, you're not honest. You're an asshole. That's a different thing. There's a way to be honest that's not horrible. And
dude, it's a whole style. I mean, it's like, oh my God. I was in Alpharetta, Georgia. I'm just bored walking around. Wandered into a shop. I thought it'd be really good because it's like local artists.
Mm-hmm.
It had an entire section dedicated to, I don't know how you put it. It's this like, it's the t-shirts that like, yeah, I'm a bitch,
yeah,
but I get things done. Or you know what I mean? This whole thing, or it's you know what I mean? It's or the style of self-help book that's like how to stop being a fucking prick,
yeah,
or that thing, or that whatever that is. And so this is, you know, really just like bad manners.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm talking about more is like because of the prohibition,
yep,
on, tantruming.
Sure.
You know, depending on how, like, yeah, you know, if you have a kid, you mm-hmm. know what it's like when the kid tantrums.
Sure.
At some point, they're gone with the wind.
Yeah.
There's nothing you could do. You're not going to untantrum a child.
Totally.
You think that as a new parent, that you're going to like say some logical,
yeah,
like,
no, it's,
but we don't have any more honey.
Yeah.
And there, I have to go to the grocery store, you see, to get honey.
Yeah.
They're not going to be like, oh, I'll stop flailing on the ground,
course,
screaming, I didn't realize that you just need to go to the grocery store. But if you have a shitty parent, then you're not going to get hopefully the whatever patience a parent can exhibit, and that's hard. But you're going to get, you stop screaming. Yeah. Why? And then you feel ashamed of these emotions.
Of
and that's what I'm saying. You start learning to... when you're experiencing these things, you start feeling ashamed. And Trungpa Rinpoche is talking about, no, if you look at any emotional state as it is, turn and face it, what you find is the enlightened mind, because there's this clarity. Mm-hmm. There's a perfect, beautiful clarity to every emotional state, even confusion, paradoxically, you know?
Sure.
And that's, to me, is like, that's the bizarre. Hare Krishna. Simultaneously, these things rise together.
Yeah.
Which is, if you're confused, for example, real confused, you're hungover, for example, you're high. How do you know you're confused? And what knows that? That strangely, the thing that knows you're confused is not confused about your confusion.
Right.
So what the fuck is that? The two happen together, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at in this long, rambling way.
Makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah. No,
it's, and I think there's, yeah, it's important to have that, because there is a separation within us sometime where, you know, you can see yourself from the outside. You see the emotions that are rising, and you sometime, if you have enough practice with it, you have a choice on whether you want to let them out or not.
Right.
And I think that's where, I don't think there's a fixed formula for what you should do. You should never let them out. Well, then you're repressed, then it's going to show up in the most horrible way. You should always express your feeling. Well, you know, context, you know, there's something to be said about, like, I'm a big believer in being like 100% honest when it comes to feelings.
Yeah.
But also 100% honest doesn't mean unfiltered. You know, you still filter things in a way that is like, I'm going to communicate them in a way that I'm not just throwing an emotional bomb in the room just because I feel like, just because I'm being honest. It's like, no, I'm going to communicate it in a way that's ideally not terroristic to the other people involved, that, like, you know, the same way as you choose the communication style they are going to employ depending on who's in front of you, and you're going to adapt it so that you can speak a common language,
right?
You know, so that, like, the person, how will this person receive it, you know? That's important to ask oneself too, and to tweak it just a little, you know, just enough not to just throw it out there, see what sticks, and walk out, you know?
This is why we have a, you know, even in Christianity, I think, though people maybe don't realize that, there's like levels. The initial articulation of any big idea is going to seem fairly simplistic, non-nuanced, even idiotic.
Sure.
And people, when they hear that initial articulation, they dismiss the entirety of whatever the philosophy is, not understanding, like, the point here is not, there isn't some delusion that some initial introduction to something like this is going to ease a person's suffering in the world.
Yeah.
But we have to start building a bridge, something.
Yeah,
so here's one idea. And then anyone who's like gotten deeper into a thing, it starts getting a little hotter.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Suddenly it's shit you would, if you'd heard that in the beginning, you might not have been so excited about the damn thing.
Yeah.
But it's like, wait, what? But you're ready for that, hopefully. And then after that, there's another one and another one and another. And it was like, oh, it's a system within which there's levels that even if you were to take someone who just was introduced to it and tell them some of the deeper ideas, they wouldn't know what the fuck you were talking about anyway.
It's like good sex, right? You don't start at 100% immediately. There's a build-up process.
I can't get to 100%.
You know, there are pills for that.
No, they don't. There's pumps.
I see.
It's a pump.
No, but you know what I mean. It's like there's a build-up process.
Yeah.
You build on excitement, and suddenly the thing that's super hot when you're at 80% wouldn't have been hot if you start that way, like from second one. And so,
Those are the great teachers.
Yeah.
Those are the greatest of teachers. Is like there isn't some monolithic method that they have for transmitting whatever it is that they're teaching. It's they're in the moment with you and they're seeing where you're at.
Right.
And then they're sort of easing you towards something. I mean, it's literally the way you teach a kid.
Yeah.
You know, initially, oh my God. My oldest, initially, resistance to riding a bike. But I know him now.
Yeah.
And I know that the moment he gets that first pedal in and realizes the freedom of a bike, he's going to be riding a bike.
Of course.
But I also know he's like me. Too much pressure.
Yeah.
He's going to massively resist that.
Yeah, of course.
So it's finding this like perfect lure.
Yeah.
How do I get him in there?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And then once you do it, it's the most beautiful thing to watch them zipping around on the bike laughing. You're like, holy shit, there, you're done.
Yeah, yeah.
The practice will take care of the rest. And so, yeah, in the articulation of one's emotions, there, in the articulation of anything that might be initially unsavory to a person, it's selfish people who imagine that they can just say the same fucking thing to every single person.
It's lazy, too.
It's like, lazy. Man,
just read the room.
If you can't handle the fucking truth, that's not my fucking fault. I think you're a bitch.
Yeah.
Maybe there's another way to say that.
Exactly. To me, that's why community, you know, I think it's funny because people assume that, you know, we all use words all day long, every day. So people assume that naturally and magically people are just good at communication.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, no, man, most people are awful at communication.
Horrible.
Which is the reason why they can be married for 15 years and suddenly find out that their spouse is an axe murderer because they never had a real conversation in a way that get somewhere, that they read the room, that they are able to read context. Or
why do you have all these axes?
Yeah,
exactly. You know, I've been putting off asking you, what's up with the axes with the numbers on them? Why does this axe say 15 on it?
It's just a hobby, you know. It's like,
I'm an axe collector. You know, I know what you mean though. There's like a just because of a complete, usually just because like you don't want to like hear what they say more than like they're not saying what they mean.
Yeah, or what you said, right? The throw stuff out there with the implication that whatever I say, if I'm being honest to my feelings, then it's fine. It's like, no, there are different styles of, there are different ways to express it. And, you know, the same way of expressing it that would work great in one context is completely going to alienate your audience in another context.
Right.
So why would you choose to do that?
Stupid. I'll tell you why. Because you're fucking tweeting. And nobody talks about this. Like, you really want to, like, there is a horrific filter that has happened in the world, which is a lot of the people who are, what's it called? Virtue signaling.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we say. Okay, virtue signal, snowflake. What's really going on there is more than likely a person who actually wants to help.
Mm-hmm.
Really, truly, I believe that. I believe it. Now, the problem, here's a person who wants to help, and they have some idea about
how to do it,
how everybody else should behave to make the world a better place.
Yeah.
It's still, the initial impulse is good. And then, God help us all, they decide that they're going to do one of those tweets with the hand claps. People need to stop. Now, if I read that with the hand claps, I don't give a fuck who it is. Like, literally, Buddha could rise from the dead and fucking, like, tweet some new, like, noble truth. But if those hand claps are in there,
shotgun comes in. Yes.
It's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Blocked. Fair. Not interested.
Fair.
And so, I think... But then even worse, what happens is this idiot form of communication starts happening within the comments where no one even knows anything other than the words and maybe some emojis.
Yep.
And no one's into the direct contact with the person experiencing who they are.
Totally.
Seeing the micro gestures, smelling the fear or the joy or whatever. Because, you know, how many times have you gotten a text that could be interpreted
totally.
A million different ways totally. Just simply because it's not spoken, not in person. And then everyone, and this is why you hear so often, when I meet people in person, they seem great.
Yeah, totally. And then you get the online version.
And it's the hell. Like, it's a hell realm.
Yeah, absolutely.
A hell realm of people screaming and raging. You just you meet them in person, everything's great. The reason is because this form of communication that we're engaging in, it used to be limited to you'd have to write someone a fucking letter.
Yeah.
And in the letter, at least you can see the handwriting.
Totally.
The shake of the hand in rage, or like they're drunk clearly or whatever. But even with a text, everything's getting, all the human elements getting filtered out.
And I think there are two levels. One, the text aspect that you said, it filters out so much of the real communication.
Yeah.
So it's hard to read. That's one level. And that's already bad. But at least that one is personal, right? The text arrives to you. So the person is already thinking, even though it's a limited form of communication, how can I write something that would resonate with this person in a way that they understand what I'm saying? It's even worse when you take it to the next stage, and it's like the social media stage, where you're essentially writing a text for a mass of whatever people are out there that are going to read it. And of course, in that group, there's going to be people of all ideas. They come from all kinds of backgrounds. They come, so there's no context, right? You're just throwing a message into the void with absolutely without being able to read the room.
Yeah.
And it's not that you're going to modify your message depending on who's there because you're a liar or because I'm going to say this thing to this person because they like me and I'll say, no, the message may be the exact same, but the way you will choose to communicate it.
Right.
I'm going to approach, if I want to reach a certain conclusion, I'm going to approach it completely different if I'm talking to person A and to person
Absolutely.
B, because person A speak a kind of language that is not going to resonate with whatever I'm going to say to person B. We'll get to the same place, but the dance to get there is completely different.
Absolutely.
And I have to tailor it to whoever is in front of me. Send a message into the void, seriously, that's like Lao Tzu is banging his head against the wall somewhere, because it's exactly it's the worst of the spoken word losing the flexibility necessary
Absolutely.
For actual good communication.
Yeah, you know? It filters out the soul.
It really does.
And you, when you think in terms of like, you know, identity as a sort of construct cobbled together, mostly not intentionally cobbled together by experience, cobbled together by DNA. So you have these like set of preferences essentially that have been forged by time and good luck or bad luck or whatever. And then you start, I don't know, you take a healthy dose of acid and you realize that that's just bullshit anyway.
Yeah.
So then you, if you have any kind of awareness regarding your own identity, look at yourself 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whoever that was, probably very different. I mean, otherwise you and I would be fucking playing with G.I. Joes right now if we could go back far enough. I don't know if you were into that. I was. You didn't like G.I. Joes?
Not G.I.
Joes. What were
you
into?
But, you know,
what were you into?
Right.
What toys did you like?
I'm trying to think. I had this thing that actually tells you a lot about where I'm at. As a kid, they had these tiny plastic toys. I don't think they had them in the U.S. In Italy, they were like historical characters. So it was like ancient Egyptians, ancient Romans.
Didn't have that shit.
And so I would spend my time just making up personal. I was an only child growing up. I was born in 1974. So
I keep forgetting
no
you're the child of a philosopher.
So I would spend my time essentially playing movies in my head with these little things. And I would just have a blast that way. And what I do now is not that different.
Yeah, I was like making Play-Doh figurines and putting them in the gears of my mom's exercise bike. Imagine they were in factory accidents.
That's actually pretty cool.
It was fun, but fucked up my mom's bike and got me to the therapist. She was like, what the fuck are you doing? What's wrong with you? And then, anyway, the point is, though I still do that, mostly we change.
Sure.
And so then, now we realize, it's kind of a constructed identity. For better or for worse, not to say it's invalid or something, it's still mostly just some melting candle wax. Then you take that cobbled together identity and then you construct an online identity.
Sure.
So now you're essentially what we've got going on online is the most insane form of dollhouse.
Yeah.
Now you're parading this doll, which is you, and everyone else is parading their dolls. Yep. And just like kids playing with dolls, these dolls become caricatures of what was already a caricature. So you get this secondary thing, arguing with the secondary thing, or it gets even weirder, man, is mixed in with a human with a doll of like, I am a powerful man. And then the doll, I'm a sensitive man. Yeah. And then the sensitive man and powerful man fight. You're a toxic masculinity. You're a snowflake.
Yeah.
Then mixed into that, robots who have taken human personality, cloned it, and now there's some automatons mixed in there. It's like, Slava Ukraine!
Stuck in the flames.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's the most bizarre dollhouse of all time, and people take that dollhouse so seriously. And even worse, they extrapolate from the interactions of these dolls online a consensus. That's where it gets really fucking weird, Danielle. So we already have a filter that takes out all nuance from most conversations. The filter allows for a generally two-dimensional, at best, caricature of oneself. And then thrown into that is automated bots designed to create the sense of a consensus. And then you're looking into that dollhouse and you're thinking, that's the world.
Yeah, of course.
Dear God, the world is fucked up.
Yeah.
And it's not the world at all. Mm-hmm. It's a technological lunatic asylum.
Yeah, and I mean, the problem is that because it starts not being the world at all, but then because so many people spend so much time inside the lunatic asylum, it becomes their world. And then it becomes, even when you meet them in person, they are like 80% there, you know? So it's like, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like, it didn't start that way, but if you spend enough time in it and you constantly are there, that's how your that becomes your experience. That becomes
your turn into the doll.
Yeah, exactly.
You turn into a doll! Yeah, and then you're out there fucking setting a Tesla on fire. Yeah. Next thing you know, you're pouring gasoline on a fucking Tesla. A dumbass, completely unaware that those Teslas are like fucking George Orwell's. That's 1984. Big Brother would drive a goddamn Tesla. They're covered in fucking cameras. These poor dumb kids. My wife just sent me this. It's really sad and so dumb. I mean, it's hard to feel too much sympathy, but listen to this. This is from Reddit. Of course. Reddit, legal advice. First of all, if you're going on Reddit, fucking legal advice,
you're already gone the wrong way.
You're doomed. Daughter is being prosecuted for felony vandalism to vehicles, California. What else can be done? Who can we contact? Hello, I made a throwaway account to post here. My daughter, African-American, 18 years old, was involved in a protest at a Tesla dealership. After the protest, she apparently vandalized, spray painted plus physical damage, a Tesla and Cybertruck, and was caught on sentry mode. How clear are these cameras? Parenthetical. Yeah. In other words, like, is there any way she could like get away with it? She told her lawyer that she was coaxed by her friends to do it. I'm scared for her and want her to have the best possible future, but I'm afraid that she's going to get a harsh sentence if found guilty, which her lawyer said is highly likely given the evidence. Yeah. Now, when you consider what drove this 18-year-old to set a Tesla on fire? Was it person-to-person communication?
Of course.
No. It was some shit she landed on the wrong fucking subreddit that apparently failed to also say, listen, if you're going to fucking burn a goddamn Tesla, mask up.
Yeah,
you got COVID.
Yeah.
But even worse, no one in... This is the other problem where the censorship emerges. Like, I don't see in the conversation of rage at Elon Musk and the subsequent ignition of Teslas, spray painting Teslas. The assumption seems to be when you go out there to spray paint a Tesla, that you, the person who bought that Tesla.
Right. You had an issue with that person.
Was like, you know what I love?
Yeah.
Elon Musk. Yeah, I really love oligarchs. You know what I love? The oligarchy. What's it? Honey. What's a good car
right,
that shows course. I support an oligarchy. Hey, honey, what's a good car to show I'm a fascist Nazi who supports the oligarchy? Oh,
yeah.
Babe.
Yeah.
Tesla.
Right.
Probably what happened was somebody was like, man, I don't want to fuck up the planet with fossil fuels.
Right.
So I'm going to get a fucking Tesla.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, some 18-year-old is setting your shit on fire, spray painting Nazi on the side of it. And you just got that fucking Tesla because you were inspired by Greta Thunberg. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the most
ridiculous of protests.
But I mean, what's happening, I think, is like we live in an environment that because we spend so much time online and like the thing that gets attention online, the way the algorithm is built, the algorithm feeds on. I did actually a Substack at some point. I had fun with that. I wrote this whole thing of comparing. I was started speaking about Aztec divinities demanding blood sacrifices and going like, oh, that was not real, went away with... No, that is extremely real. That is the algorithm currently. That is the Aztec gods are trapped at the roots of the algorithm and they demand our outrage, anger, suffering.
Jesus Christ, that's good.
Know, we are feeding the algorithm that way. Pain or sacrifice, because that's what it does, right? It feeds on human suffering because that's what gets attention, you know? Anger, outrage is what gets attention. And so we do our daily sacrifices to the gods of the algorithm in a way that...
Give me your pain.
Yeah, which is atrocious because then it multiplies.
Make your offering of pain.
Indeed.
Now, this is amazing. And it weirdly connects to... something that floats around the conspiracy boards from time to time. Inevitably, somebody will show a motherboard.
Mm-hmm.
They will zoom in on the motherboard. I don't know if you've seen that. Have you seen that shit?
Never know.
Can you, Josh, pull up zooming in on Apple computer chips? This is really wild. You got to see this, dude. It freaks me out. But dude, if I was an Aztec god, where would I want to live?
Yeah.
So watch this. It's the wildest thing.
That's where the Aztec gods are.
Yeah. It just kind of looks like a Google Maps.
Yeah.
But it's deeper. And deeper.
Yeah.
And deeper. I'm surprised someone hasn't done one of these with a dick at the fully zoomed in.
Yeah.
Deeper. Deeper. Yes, deeper. Look at that.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yeah.
And so, like, what inevitably happens is within the circuitry, maybe not so much in that one, but maybe pull up the surface of a microchip right there. Let's do another zoom in on these things. This is fun to do when you're blasted. But somewhere in this circuitry, suddenly you will start seeing what appears to be sigils. You'll start seeing these like symbol sets.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe like pause it right there. Yeah. So you look at that and you start seeing these like, you know, just the natural curvature of the lines in there and stuff. If you look at the right place, you will see something. Now, do me a favor. Pull up Lesser Key of Solomon. Famous grimoire, The Lesser Key of Solomon. For those of you listening to this, well, you can use your imagination, I'm sure, to know what I'm talking about. But yeah, that, go back up, Josh. Click on that. See if we got it. Okay, there you go. Scroll back up. So, like, look at that. Now,
yeah.
Notice in the perimeter, the way that the circles with the lines connecting them look identical mm-hmm. to circuitry. And so this pops up on the, you could take that off, man. Anytime I pull up the Lesser Key of fucking Solomon, people who practice magic are like, dude, what are you fucking doing? Don't even show that.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm showing. It's on Wikipedia. Blame them. But when you consider just what you're saying, that within the machinery that is the home of the algorithm
mm-hmm.
and is the storage area for the rage, which has been converted into just ones and zeros. There's literal sigils. There, uh-huh. what could be interpreted as, yeah. as sigils. It really becomes quite eerie.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then when you look up that these people, can you pull up early computer development occult? Have you ever looked into this?
Mm-mm. Oh, it's a good rabbit hole.
The hidden history of digital technologies and the occult ideas that are reflected in programming language explanation. Coding the Digital Occult Project. The project traces the occult histories of digital technologies and how they challenge binary, linear, colonial, and patriarchal. I don't know what the fuck that is. Esoteric programming language. These languages are designed to make code hard to read and write, which can be a challenge for programmers. So in other words, like the grimoire is now, the wizard takes a magical language, C++.
Yep.
Uses the magical language to invoke the entity,
yep.
which is the program, the spell. That's yep. the spell that they're casting. And then that spell multiplies via buying,
yep.
downloading. Anytime you're downloading an app, you're summoning
demons.
Yes.
Yes.
And when you say a thing like what you're saying, suddenly all of that, which could easily just sound like, yeah, take another bong rip, dumbass. It starts seeming strange and true and bizarre.
Well, and also, I mean, at a very basic level that doesn't require any no bong hits or anything to appreciate is think about like the people who make a living, and there's plenty of them who make a living stoking outrage online. Their whole shtick, whether they have a podcast, whether they have a magazine, whether they whatever that is like their whole thing is they know that they get engagement by pissing people off.
Yeah.
So their whole thing becomes, let's wake up this morning and throw something that's going to create anger, that's going to create a backlash, that's going to create group A fighting against group B. The algorithm will pat me on the back for having performed a good sacrifice because I'm delivering massive amount of engagement, which is built on usually anger, and I've done my job. And this is what people make a living with, you know, and they are rewarded both financially and just about every other way by doing that.
Dude, years ago, a friend of mine was out to dinner with an influencer. And the influencer, I don't remember, had posted some bullshit that had created quite a bit of outrage online. And I think my friend was like trying to comfort that this is in LA and, you know, where there's like, you know, a whole burgeoning, like, you know, not like, you know, podcast influencer, but, you know, just like people who have developed a kind of online personality. They recommend brands. Anyway, the point is, my friend was trying to comfort this person and they were like, so happy. And they talked and found out that they were marketing majors.
Yeah, of course.
And it's called rage farming.
Yeah, of course.
And it wasn't just like they accidentally posted some shit that upset a billion people.
No, it was planned.
And not only was that phase planned, many phases after planned. Yeah, the whole thing, a campaign.
Yeah.
And people are stumbling upon this shit like, you motherfucker, why the fuck would you say that? And it's like, dude, don't you understand? You are at their altar.
Exactly.
Offering your rage to them, which they are taking and converting into money.
Yep.
Vampirizing your rage, turning it into fucking cash, and you just got them fucking paid.
Absolutely.
Now, people just don't understand that yet. If they did, everything would change right away. If you understood that, if you really want to fuck someone up that you disagree with online, don't say anything.
Exactly.
Say nothing.
Yep.
Just crickets.
Yep.
They'll die in the fucking vine. They'll wither and die. We don't understand that yet.
No. It's the human thing, right? I see something that pissed me off. I need to react. Because I'm fighting against the bad. And it's like, you're giving them power. Your reaction, as you said, is what gives them power, is what they will be able to take that energy and turn into money, turn it into popularity, turn it into... And I've seen it a bunch of times with people who are not deranged when they start. And they'll something out there and it's cool, and they get a little engagement. And then they put something absolutely outrageous and it gets massive engagement. And then they're like, I'm getting rewarded for this. I'm not getting rewarded for that. okay. Suddenly the frequency of the outrage increases until it becomes their whole shtick, because that's what gets them attention and money. And it's disgusting because I'm just like, dude, I mean, go sell drugs, do something. If you really need money that bad, there's probably, if you go sell drugs, it's less damaging than the shit you're doing this way to other people.
Or to you.
It's, to me, is, I mean, the fact that, like, I understand the mechanism, but it still doesn't justify it in this list, because it's like, man, that is disgusting. You know, choosing to go down that path consciously because you're getting, it's gross.
You just made me think of the best invention ever. It's two things. So we might become billionaires from this. I'll share the profits 50-50 because I was in the room with you. You too, Josh. Do you see how Josh and I dress the same now, by the way?
I saw that.
Aren't we cute?
Very.
Are we cute?
Extremely, yes.
Do you mean that?
110%.
Okay. Now, here's the invention. Holy shit, this will change everything. Now I know. Now I know how Einstein felt when he came up with the theory of relativity.
Okay, no pressure.
Here's how it works. It's a desktop tool. Now, on one, basically, you take, it's similar to the thing I use to measure my blood sugar. You take a pen, you prick yourself, you extract blood. Now, if you're really angry at someone, if you put a drop of your blood, and it will know it's your blood, you can't use anyone else's blood. You can't like have a hostage and extract their blood. I don't know. It's a little more complex than I imagined initially. But the point is, it takes your blood, drop of blood. This means you're really mad. You put the drop of blood into this machine, converts it. Yes, this is actually an angry person. He's so offended by what you have said that they've extracted blood from their finger. Now, on the other side, it's like a hand slapper, and it slaps your hand. So every drop of blood extracted, you know, if you extract the blood, you get to slap the hand of the person who did it.
Yeah.
Now you're asking, why would I want my hand slapped? I'll tell you fucking why. Profit sharing. For every hand slap, it mines crypto. You know what I mean? You see all these wealthy people with blistered hands, but it's like, dude, every hand slap is, I don't know, some percentage of Bitcoin or something.
Of course.
And the drop of blood, you know, you got to fucking get through the machine and slap the hand of an ass.
Clearly.
Or an ass. Yes. I mean, an ass slapper would be cool too.
Speaking of which.
You don't like my invention?
No.
Now that I say it, it sounds like.
No, how could I argue with such genius?
How did you? Yeah, thank you for holding us. Now, where did that come from?
I fucked up my wrist. And this is why I came to buy it. This is the best part. By slapping my lady's ass too hard. I wish I was making that up. I just went whack on her ass and just like hit my wrist at the wrong angle and fucked it up.
Getting old sucks.
Yeah, it's but you know, if you're going to mess up your wrist, that's probably a good way for a wrist.
At least
to go,
you didn't break it.
It's like, yeah, there's that. And
by the way, that's the most amazing flex I've ever seen. It's subtle. Beautiful, powerful, because also kind of what you're articulating there, and I mean this with truly with all due respect, is your lady has a very, very strong, muscular ass.
I think
not a lot of padding down there.
Not too many squats over time.
That's a lot of squats.
Yes.
If you've gotten your ass in such powerful shape that a slap damages the wrist.
Yes.
That's a lot of time at the gym.
Yeah.
And I know your lady.
Yeah.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
Scary. Easily would kick both of our asses. Wouldn't you say? Don't hesitate. Say yes.
Jesus fucking Christ,
Danielle.
Yeah, I mean, she messed up my wrist. So yes, of course, clearly.
In that moment, in that micro moment, I saw you.
I don't learn.
I know exactly what you thought. Here's what you thought. You thought, definitely, she kicked your ass, Duncan.
That's
and then you're like, but I practice martial arts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. You were imagining like
give myself a decent chance, right.
You know I'm going to go down.
Yeah.
Probably immediately.
Right.
Broken nose. I don't know how to block anything. You're going to hear the crunch of my nose, ooh, see a splatter of blood. I'll probably cry because it hurts so bad. And then you're already imagining like some stance you're in.
Yeah,
you
just like, fuck you up. Yes.
You weren't even thinking like, why are we fighting?
No, that's secondary. Why are we fighting? It's for later. We can talk about it.
Why are we both attacking my girlfriend?
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I got the visual because I remember, yeah, whenever you break somebody's nose, it's gross. It's blood everywhere. It's just nasty.
See, I can't say that.
Yeah.
Because when you say whenever you break someone's nose, it means it's happened to you more than once.
Yes, that is correct.
You didn't say when I broke a person's nose. It was whenever I break a person's nose. What are you doing out there in OI, man? You're slapping asses. You've got ass slap wounds. You're breaking fucking noses. OI is this peaceful place. Bilelli comes to town.
Until I arrived.
This cracking, thunderous sound of your hand smacking your fucking martial artist lover's ass echoing through the OI hills. Followed by the crunch of the nose of probably someone who just came to your door because they were like having a bad mushroom trip.
You know, actually, we have been having sonic booms because SpaceX is launching close by. Jesus, so about once a week, the whole damn town shakes. It's like having a 4.0 quake kind of thing where it's like everything shakes, the dog freaks out. So I think is my ass's lap is going to be the next, the counter to the sonic boom. But you know, actually what you said is funny because it's real. There's a lot of people that I run into and I realize, you know, we understand each other. We come from the same place. And I start talking and I realize, whoa, we do come from different places because they usually, these are people, especially in Ohio, who are sort of grown up, upper middle class, fairly wealthy, fairly. And in my mind, I'm like, you know when, kind of like when you break somebody's nose or you know when, and I say things and I see horror in their eyes I'm just like, oh, you don't know. You haven't been.
I try so hard not to do that. And because you just don't understand.
Yeah.
You can really like wound people.
Yeah.
Not even because you're saying something mean to them. I had the same experience. I was just casually talking about how on another podcast, I was making a joke about a pit bull would climb in my window and I would have to fillet it.
Yeah.
And you know, I hang out with comics.
Yeah, it's normal. It's fine. Yeah.
And, you know, that's the kind of thing that blowing a pit bull is not going to even raise an eyebrow.
Of course.
If anything, someone will add, there'll be questions about the taste. And then this is like at dinner.
Yeah.
And I really did not intend offense.
Of course.
And then as I'm telling the story and I realize like.
This is not the right
terrible
crowd.
Silence.
Yeah.
And a kind of sadness on their faces. and it's like, and I know now there's really nothing I can do.
Right.
Because I have talked about making a joke about blowing a fucking pit bull. And I don't know how to repair that.
Yeah, how do I walk that back? Yeah,
there's no way.
Yeah.
There's no way to fucking walk it back.
That's brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, that's again, it goes back to what we were talking about. Not everybody speaks the same language.
Context.
Yep. Yeah, you have to understand that. It's weird that most people, that seems to be lacking to some degree. But not really. You know what? When I get around most people, there is like a normal, even like people who I know. Mm-hmm. What I really love is getting in a conversation with someone who's made an assessment of me based on who I'm friends with.
Yeah. Oh, that's the worst. That's the fucking, like, I hate the whole guilt by association stuff.
And for one, the assessment they've made is generally a poor assessment of the person that they're judging that I'm friends with. But then because of that, blah, blah. But then it's fun to talk with them.
Yeah.
Because after they talk with you for a few minutes, there's some confusion that comes over their face. Wait a minute. I thought you, what? Oh, you're not Andrew Tate or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
And then it's a beautiful moment, really, because it's, and then also if I've made judgments about them, that starts falling away and you realize like, oh God, the poison, these Aztec gods.
Goes back to the Aztec gods.
What the fuck have they done to us? Yeah. What the fuck? Wouldn't it be better to just from time to time drag someone on top of a pyramid and cut their fucking heart out?
Yeah.
And then we're all friends.
Yes. I think that's, I would vote for you.
We got to get back to that.
Yes. Yes. We're missing, no, because I mean, seriously, this level of suffering that's extracted in this way, it's unreal. It's like affects almost anyone who has online access on a daily basis to some degree or another. And it sort of start poisoning your personality, your attitude, the way you respond to people. I did it as an experiment recently on social media stuff where I would say something, and of course, it doesn't even matter what you say. You're always going to have four or five people who are like, you fucking suck. I hate you. This is the most horrible thing anyone has ever said. And, you know, usually the classic response is either block or, you know, really let them have it. And I've done it. And, you know, it feels good in the moment, but it's probably not the best, most productive use of my time and energy. And then there have been times where, like, I'll completely step out of character in whatever those dynamics are, and I'll be like, hey man, you know, if you disagree with what I said, that's cool. Fuck, I barely agree with myself half of the time, so maybe I am saying something stupid, but if you tell me this way, I'm not gonna hear you because you're just coming out of the gate being a dick. If you tell me in a different way, I may actually listen to you. And you know what's fun is, like, not all the time, of course, because some people will be like, fuck you and die anyway, but like 8 out of 10 will switch their tone and will go like, wait, but what I meant was da, 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 da. And they're still kind of 80% dicks. And then I play it one level further and one level. And by the end, you know, we are best friends and we're getting along. And I'm just,
and then
like,
you're like, you want to go get coffee?
Yeah, pretty much.
And then they come and get coffee and you strangle them.
Of course. It was all a setup.
You lure them in.
It was all a setup to lower
and
their
break
guards.
Break their fucking nose.
Exactly.
And,
so, and then strangle them.
Dude, yeah, my friend had this technique where, you know, someone would come at him all pissed at this or that. And instead of ignoring it, he'd be like, oh my God, shit. Didn't mean to offend you. Hey, you know, I was looking at your profile. And I kind of need some. I've been looking for an assistant. And immediately they'd be like, I'm a real fan.
Of course.
I'd love to work with
always.
You. Like instantaneously, whatever the fucking crazy shit was, the moment there was like a chance to work with him.
Of course.
Dude, so last night, I got to tell you what I saw. How are we doing on time, Josh? So last night, last minute, I got a text from Rogan. He's like, you want to go see Age of Disclosure here at South by Southwest? Do you know what that is? So this was the second showing of what I've been on Reddit. I go on Reddit. I can't remember if it's alien or UFO. It's the UAP subreddit. And they've been talking about this doc for a while, saying this is like, a lot of people are saying this is the most important disclosure doc that has come out yet. The dude who made it in secret for 2 years, knowing that if like the wrong people found out this was being made, they would find a way to stop it. Holy shit. It was so cool. Theater full of people. And I'm guessing many of them are like up to date on the UAP phenomena. Probably some of them are just South by Southwest. I have no fucking
first
idea.
Time, of course.
And so the genius of this thing, though I wouldn't say there's a lot of like new data, was that it's so many high-ranking government officials, bipartisan, from so, you've got Air Force, Navy, intelligence, you've got the usual suspects like Elizondo and stuff, you've got, but it's so Harry Reid, Marco Rubio, on and on and on and on and on. Just, it's just, interview after interview after interview after interview after interview with these people mutually, pretty much mutually saying, we have alien fucking wreckage, mm-hmm. and we have been reverse engineering it.
Yep.
And this is where it gets really cool. I guess this was the new data for me, though. I'd heard bits and pieces of it. Stop me if you've heard this. Anyone listening, as soon as this thing's available, watch it. So here's how it works. It's so weird. I think Marco Rubio's talking about this. So essentially, Elizondo and all these other people start realizing these UAPs are showing up. And it's a national security threat.
Yep,
what the fuck is this? It's going 40,000 miles per hour and it's stopping on a dime. We have no technology like that at all. So of course, they're like, let's figure out what the fuck this is. What is it?
Yep.
And in the exploration of this phenomena, they realize that there is something called the Legacy Program, which is some shadowy, mysterious coalition of, like, I don't know, deep state operatives who, for a long time, have been cleaning up UFO wreckage. And then, or they don't clean it up. They involve private, like Lockheed Martin.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is suddenly Lockheed Martin goes to clean up a UFO, or it's under the umbrella of a private corporation, meaning you don't have to do Freedom of Information Acts mm-hmm. with them.
No.
Completely private. So if you go to the federal government to try to fish around for this shit, you're not going to find it because it's not happening in at the federal level. It's happening in some weird shadowy partnership.
Yeah.
And so I had no idea. They just tried to pass this bill. Do you know about this? Mm-hmm. They just tried to pass a bill that was the most like definitive disclosure bill ever, basically saying, if there's alien wreckage, knowledge of any of these craft, knowledge of any of this, you must let us know. Mm-hmm. You can't keep it secret anymore.
Yeah.
Now, you would think something like that would just get passed.
No, of course not. I would think there's no chance in hell.
But why? Passed. Why would you think it wouldn't get passed?
Because why would you want it to be out there in front of everybody? If it's stuff that you're still trying to figure out what the hell to do with it, how you can use it. It's like, why would you? Never mind the possible consequences of mass panic. Never mind. I mean, it can affect.
They talk about that.
Yeah.
They talk about all these considerations. Yeah. They've said, and it's really amazing how much of these like government people are saying, we have had meetings discussing the repercussions of letting people know everything that apparently we know about this shit.
Yeah.
And now it looks like bipartisan. Most people are Chuck Schumer, mm-hmm. Marco Rubio, the late, great Harry Reid. All these people are saying, no, it is essentially a crime to know that we are not alone in the universe and not share that information. The government does not have the right to withhold something of this magnitude from the planet. And it's sadly nothing to do with some compassionate sense of not wanting to create mass hysteria. Mm-hmm. But as it turns out, fear of prosecution, because apparently a lot of laws have been broken in the sharing of this technology with various private contractors and not other ones.
Sure.
Lawsuits would happen.
Of course.
That's why the pushback. The pushback is people think their ass is on the line, so they're now trying to pass a new bill.
Of course.
And the new bill is saying amnesty, meaning
from here forward, but not in the past.
No, in the past.
Yeah, exactly.
You get pure amnesty. Oh, right. Yeah.
No, like everything done before amnesty, we start from scratch.
And they think that's going to get it pushed through.
Yeah.
And whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see.
So have you seen any orbs or anything out there in OI? Because people I know who live out there say they see shit sometimes. I guess it could be SpaceX.
Not out there. I did have Definitely once. I remember once, like many years ago, I was camping in Wyoming or something like that, you know, and I'm about to go to sleep. I'm outside my tent. I'm looking at the sky. Pretty beautiful. I see, you know, a couple of planes cross by and cool. And I see this thing that has, you know, flashing lights. It looks like a plane. It's like, it's clearly a plane. It's moving at a certain speed. And the next second, and I swear, no psychedelics involved, no nothing. It just sped up at about 100 times the speed it was going before in a zigzag pattern.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell was that? You know, that was...
It's one of them.
Right. I was like, that was weird.
Here's where it gets cool, man. What you just described is happening so much that they now have a set of, I can't remember what they called it, but it's a set of characteristics of these things. And from that, just the set of characteristics, they've been able to theorize what the fuck is happening. Mm-hmm. So take the Tic Tac, for example. Yep. Commander Fravor sees this fucking thing. It's going 40,000 miles per hour or something. It's like insanely fast. When I've seen the footage of that thing, I get frustrated because I'm like, what the fuck? They don't have better cameras or whatever?
Of course.
Now, as it turns out, when you're picking these things up, when you're filming these fucking things, they do have a weird blurriness that would make you think it's being intentionally blurred. That's not what's happening. That's just what they look like. And the reason that they look like that, according to this awesome theory, is there is an anti-grav. Essentially, the theory is, and I know I sound like what's cool about this documentary is it's not people like me babbling. It's like, these are people who've like worked in the DOD for 20 years.
Right.
And so they're saying that there's a bubble around these things that's warping time space, that inside the bubble, time is moving differently than outside the fucking bubble. Mm-hmm. Somehow this disparity in time space configuration allows them to accelerate in ways that we've never seen before and stop without turning into fucking jelly. And the other crazy thing they said is the new radar systems they have are allowing them to peer through the bubble now and see that there are vehicles inside, cubes, weird fucking cubes.
Okay.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
It was so cool. Theater full of people, and I just kept looking around and like, just looking at people, like trying to process.
Of course.
This is not Alex Jones.
No, of course. But I mean, even in the news, like remember when was that? Like 2 months ago or something, there were all the quote unquote drones over New Jersey. And the government was like, yeah, we don't know what the hell that is. Not ours, not our technology. We don't get it. And then it just kind of disappeared from the news. I don't know if they try to put a bow on it at the end and try to give an explanation. I may have missed out some stuff, but remember how it was constantly in the news and then it just, from one day to the next, it just disappeared with no... Maybe there was an explanation that I missed. I don't know.
I think Trump gave a very frustrating explanation because he said he was going to look into it. And I think he
Trump,
just...
a frustrating explanation? That never happens.
I think he just said it's ours.
Oh, yeah. After spending a month saying it's not. Yeah, that's exactly what the fuck.
Yeah, well, you know, the this phenomena is happening so much now that not only is it like apparently a national security threat, it is a threat to just planes.
Right.
You don't like we don't know what the fuck these things are.
Yeah.
We have no idea. Are they? One of the theories is they're coming from the ocean, that they've got bases down there. We don't know what 80, if it's down there.
Yeah.
The other theory is extraterrestrial, hyperdimensional. The other theory, which is really fucked up, is this is what Rubio was saying. So you have like this legacy program, right? There's someone in it. They know that these things are crashing. They know they can collect the debris. He's saying it's an arms race, essentially, because these things are showing up all over the planet. And you don't want, if you know one of these things has crashed, you don't want China or Russia to get it. You want to get it. Because if we can reverse engineer the tech, then we're going to have
way ahead. Right.
Incredible superiority.
Yeah.
So this race happens where people go to try to scoop up the fucking wreckage. And you know, this is a deep government program. It's happening, but time passes. And whoever had that position working to get this shit scooped up retires.
No.
New person comes in. Person doesn't get quite as much information. Then a new person comes in. Less information. this now what's left is some like group of private contractors that has no connection to the federal government anymore, but has reverse engineered this tech and is using it to make shit tons of money.
Yeah.
And that's the whole creepy thing, is maybe what we're seeing is actually not, maybe at one point something crashed, but what we're seeing is some fucking Lockheed Martin test vehicle, because they figured out how to reverse engineer this shit. But the main takeaway is they're all over the goddamn place. And I really, at the end of this thing, my general theory was it's got to be our tech. But after this, I don't know, man.
Yeah,
that's, it gives you a real uneasy feeling, like, oh, fuck, I hope it's our tech.
Right, exactly.
But if it's not our tech, if it's another country's tech.
Yeah, that's not good. Or if it's.
We're fucked.
Yeah, it's not good either way. Yeah, the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little on the. Yeah, that's a little rough to contemplate.
You don't want to believe it either.
Yeah.
The other thing that I noticed in my own head was, and what's beautiful about the documentary is as it progresses, you don't want to believe it for some reason.
Sure. I mean, for obvious reason, because it upends any sense of stability you have in the world as it is. And so it's like, it definitely messes with your head. It's not something you want to be like, okay, everything I thought was true until the other day gets to be put in discussion today. That's not a fun feeling. It's a pretty uneasy feeling. So, of course, most people are going to, you know, most people would freak out, 100%. So,
yeah, Aaron, my wife and I were having the conversation, like, just realizing, like, the documentary was amazing in that it forces you to contend with, like, okay, either there's a bipartisan conspiracy to make people think that there is a superior technology existing on the planet with us that we have no idea what it is. And
yeah, that doesn't sound right.
Or there is an advanced civilization surveilling our fucking planet right now, and it's happening more and more and more and more, like they just discovered us or something, and now they're checking us out.
Which of course raises the question, why? Because that's a little unsettling, the possible answers. I mean, some could be good, but again, the fact that it's an open-ended thing is a bit unsettling.
That's the creepy part.
Yeah.
Is that what does seem to be a commonality between all these people who are saying this shit? Stanford fucking professors. There's some professor from Stanford. The CIA shows up at Stanford. We want you to check these samples because these are people who have come into contact with these things. They're sick. They're sick. People who have been around these things have like all kinds of fucked up problems. And so, again, this is someone, it's fucking Stanford. What the fuck does a Stanford professor have to gain? From yapping about the CIA coming to his office so he could look at.
Right.
So, you know, he's just like, yeah, the people who've been around these things are like have organ damage because whatever energy field these things are putting off, if you get too close, it fries you. It like fucks up your organs, which is good news. I'm not good news, but it's good to hear. Someone like me, if I see a fucking UFO in the forest, I'm going to go check it out.
Of course you would.
You would too. Oh, no, give me, you wouldn't.
No.
If you saw a glowing cube in Ojai, shimmering, glowing cube.
You know what I would say? I'd say, Duncan, go and let me know what's up.
All right,
you know,
man.
Come back. And
no, you're probably right. I probably wouldn't go.
Yeah.
But I'd be tempted to.
Yeah.
How many like of us out there, though, would do that? It's just good to hear. Oh, like, if you do see a crash Tic Tac, stay the fuck away from it because it's gonna fry your ass.
Yeah, that's not a good feeling. Yeah.
Well, any parting thoughts, Daniele?
Parting thoughts. Oh, you know what? I have to say this, or I'm gonna fuck it. I think they probably kept my family hostage and they're ready to torture them. Otherwise, I have to bring this up. So I ended up being, I joined these two friends. We started a mushroom company. It's a mushroom, not as in the good kind. Mushroom as in the other stuff is like a cordyceps, chaga, right?
Wow.
The medicinal mushroom stuff. And I've been, you know, because I had access and stuff, I had been experimenting heavily with it. I've been thinking it. So, you know, just throwing it out there in case anyone is interested in that stuff. We started this company called Purest Mushrooms. Check it out.
Wait, you got to do a better pitch.
Yeah, I mean, I'm shy because I'm not a commercial guy. I don't. But basically what it is, do you ever mess with any of the mushrooms, like the medicinal? I know you've messed with plenty of mushroom in another department, but like medicinal stuff, like anything from cordyceps.
Yeah, cordyceps. I remember taking cordyceps and like I do.
Did you feel anything?
Yeah, I did.
It
had a positive effect, but I feel like I'm susceptible to placebo effect. So
I think each one is different in what they can do, and also you are different from the next guy, so what works for you may not work for the next
guy. What was your experience? What'd you take?
Cordyceps, to me, I noticed it in working out. It's just stamina was way better.
Yeah,
I just had more energy. I could do more rounds. Like I normally would get to the end of a jiu-jitsu class and be like dying on the mat, and I would be like, come on, guys, let's do one more round.
Isn't cordyceps the shit that grows off of caterpillars?
And it's the one that's, if you watch The Last of Us, that's cordyceps. Except that the good thing is, so we're not about to unleash a mushroom zombie apocalypse, because you need, your body temperature need to be, we would be dead for the necessary temperature for cordyceps to start taking over our body. So instead, we just get stamina, which is not a bad
thing. But you do harvest them because they grow off of insects,
where the hell cordyceps is usually as far as I know, cordyceps grows I think it's wood.
We got it. Yeah. Cordyceps mushrooms from Daniele Bolelli, harvested from caterpillars
and gnomes.
And if
you're
too cold, they'll fucking grow all over your ass.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what happens.
I'll pitch that up front too, man. You got to give us the website for that.
Yes, of course.
I'd love to try some too.
Cool. I have some for you.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. Thank you so much. It's so wonderful to catch up.
I know, man. I haven't seen you in too long. This is the longest we have gone without podcasting since I first met you.
It's not good for my soul.
2012.
You gotta move here.
I know.
Get the fuck out of Ohio. What are you doing out there? Come out here, slap some asses, break some noses.
Let's do that.
All right. I love you, man. Thank you. That was Daniele Bolelli, everybody. Don't forget to go to puristmushrooms.com. Check out his mushrooms, History on Fire too. Check them both out and come see me out there on the road. You can find all my dates at DougGoodTrussell.com and subscribe if you want commercial free episodes. Goodbye.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.